We stopped at the understanding that employment relationship is different from the freelancer contract, in that a freelancer contract is an exchange of a specified service, precisely specified service, for a precisely specified amount of money. Whereas an employment relationship is a wider contract. It's not a specified service, it's a specified range of services, right? So the employer has the option to demand the employee to submit to his or her authority within a specified range of actions that is prescribed under the employment contract. The employment contract relative to the freelancer or sales contract has costs and benefits, and these costs and benefits play out differently in different situations. That's why the economy does not look like, the labor market does not look like a bunch of freelancer contracts and nothing else. Nor does the labor market look like a bunch of employment contract and no freelancing at all. There's a combination of freelancing and employment contract, which means that in some situations, employment contract is more beneficial to both parties, whereas in other situations, the opposite is true. The extensions of this big idea are many, and one of the extensions is, well, how can we further improve the total welfare from an employment relationship, right? So one of the problems, one of the costs of the employment relationship for the employee is that the employee has to submit to the authority of the employer, sometimes to his disadvantage, right? So if I sign an employment contract with the University of Constance, where I undertake the obligation to teach any of the specified courses from a certain range or a certain discipline, then the University of Constance will be well within their right to tell me to teach, I don't know, microeconomics, for example, whereas what I want to teach is personnel. Well, tough luck. Not a lot of demand for personnel, therefore I have to teach microeconomics or marketing or whatever, right? That's a cost to the employee, and the employee would therefore require a compensation for bearing this extra cost of flexibility. Now, can we move further from this position? And it turns out, yes, we can, if we talk about delegation of authority, right? So if we talk about an employment contract that allows the employee to exercise a little bit more authority over the range of actions that he is allowed to take. It's almost like a freelancing contract. But there is a catch. There is a principal difference between an employment contract with delegation of authority and a freelancing contract. A freelancing contract is a one-off transactional contract, specified service in return for a specified amount of money. Whereas an employment contract with a delegation of authority is still an employment contract. There's still an authority relationship going on, and we will see exactly how it plays out in the rest of the lecture today. So the paper that you have to read, and notice that it's with an asterisk, which means that you have to read it. It is exam relevant from beginning till end. And it's a classical paper in the canon of organizational economics. Legend has it that some people learn it by heart. No, that's a joke, of course. What people do learn by heart is Lazier 2000. But this one is a classical paper, so you have to read it. And it contains a very interesting extension of Simon, as I've just explained, right? So how can we make an employment contract a bit more attractive to both parties? Well, one way in which we can do so is by delegating authority. Let's look at some terms before we get on with the mathematical model in the paper. Now, the new terms, the key new terms for today's lecture are formal and real authority. So what is formal authority? Formal authority is the legal right to make a decision. I, as the holder of the chair in organizational economics at the University of Constance, have the right, according to the internal regulations, I have the right to hire student assistants to assist my personnel and myself in some tasks related to the activities of the chair. We're talking about exam invigilation, we're talking about IT services, we're talking about some data collection, etc. Right? However, what happens in practice is that I often delegate this formal authority to my administrative assistants, right? So I tell, okay, I have the formal authority, I will rubber stamp rubber stamp whatever decision you'll make. Just find an appropriate heavy from your database, and you know, if this person is half reasonable, then I will authorize the employment of this person in the position of a heavy, right? So the real authority is therefore an effective control over decisions. So you have formal authority, you have real authority, right? Formal authority is the right to make a decision. Real authority is the actual position, is the actual prerogative in making decision, right? Why is this difference important? Well, the difference is important because sometimes the person who has real authority, right, still has to submit to the formal authority of the decision maker, right? So if, let's say, I say, okay, dear secretary, please, can you find an appropriate candidate for a HIVI position? So she goes and finds a candidate for a HIVI position that she thinks is a perfect candidate for this position. I may have a different view on this, and then I will use my formal authority to override the proposal made by the secretary. In other words, you know, if we put it in the context of the principal agent framework, the bearer of the formal authority has the final say in decisions that are within their right of formal authority, even though some other agents may be given the real authority to make a lot of such decisions. Right. But sometimes, well, and that's going to be an interesting chapter here. Sometimes the principal can decide to delegate the formal authority to the agent. So not only does the agent have the real authority to make the decision, delegation of the formal authority means that even when the principal no longer likes the decision made by the agent, the principal will have no power to overrule, to override this decision, right? So if we decide to delegate the formal authority to hire HIVI personnel to administrative assistants, the consequences of this delegation is that even if the principal, that is the shareholder, that is myself, does not like the decision of the administrative assistant, he cannot override this decision. Now, delegation has obvious benefits and obvious costs, right? So the obvious benefit of delegation is that the agent has more decision-making power, and so the agent can put this decision-making power to, well, his or her benefit, right? So that's beneficial, which means that the principal can tighten up the participation constraint by lowering the wage offered to the agent while still employing the agent, right? So the economic efficiency of this contract increases from this monetary perspective. But of course, the cost of delegating authority is that, well, sometimes the decision made by the agent who has been delegated the authority to make this decision is really not to the principal's liking, and then there's nothing the principal can do. And that, of course, is costly to the principal. That's basically an example of delegating formal authority that I have just explained, summarized on this slide for you. Now let's move on to the formal model of authority in employment relationship, and the essence of this model is what happens when authority is delegated. So consider a situation which there's principal and agent. Let's call principal Philip and agent Arthur, right? So they are in an employment relationship, right? So the way this employment relationship is framed in the model by Aguillon and Terol is a little bit weird, right? So Aguillon and Terol do not talk about agent working for the principal, right? They look at a more general situation than employment relationship. So what is this more general situation? The more general situation is that there are more than three projects. What is project? It's an inverted comma, of course. There are a certain set of actions that have to be chosen, right? So think about these projects as three names on the list of HIVIs to hire to my chair, right? Or three different ways of implementing a certain action or a certain strategy, right? So you can, I don't know, if you want to run, let's say, a conference, then you can hire a catering provider A, B, C, or D, right? Or if you want to get to a conference in New York, then you can, I don't know, take this trip or that trip, or you can, you know, you can. There are different ways in which you can configure your travel, right? So all these options or projects in the language of the model are identical before information about their costs and benefits is collected, right? So the HEVs on the list, on the candidate list, look, they all look the same, right? So only names differ, but we don't know anything about these persons. We don't know how good they are, right? So we need to investigate. We need to screen them. We need to look at their performance. We need to talk to them. We need to take costly effort in order to find out the benefits, in order to find out the payoff from all these project options, right? So now the benefits from projects differ depending on whose perspective we're talking about, right? So if you look at a particular project K, right? So let's say Project K is hiring a student named Kevin as a HEVE to my chair. Hiring this student brings the benefit capital BK to the principal and small BK to the agent, right? So hiring Kevin may be very beneficial to the agent because Kevin is a personal friend or something, right? Or is a very nice guy to work with. So the benefit to the agent from this particular option may be very big, whereas to the principal, the benefit of hiring Kevin may be not that impressive. And vice versa, right? If you move to another option, let's say now we have a candidate named Kelvin or a candidate named Karen, right? So then hiring Karen may be very beneficial for the principal, well, for all sorts of reasons, but less so for the agent, right? So the idea is that each particular option on the list may have different benefits to the principal and to the agent. Now, what happens if we do not choose anyone? What happens if we just say, okay, forget it, we're not hiring anyone? Then there is the outside option or default option, which brings the pay of zero, right? So we are not gaining anything by not making a decision, but we're not losing anything by making a decision. So that's a useful fallback option, right? It's always neutral to our bottom line to make no decision at all. Now, related to this is the assumption of the so-called sufficiently bad project. What it means is that it's better to make no decision at all and get pay of zero than to make a decision based entirely on chance without investigating, right? So in other words, it's better not to hire anyone than to hire a student assistant without any information about how good he or she is, right? So that's a sufficiently bad project. Both parties prefer not to implement a project at all rather than to choose project at random. Okay, so that's the sufficiently bad project. And a good practice in understanding the model is to work out for yourself why we need this sufficiently bad project assumption. What happens if we try to relax it? But, you know, read the paper and see what you make of it. Now, so what are the payoffs? We have looked at the payoffs for each individual project, but, you know, at some point, and depending on whose formal authority it is, at some point, one particular project will be implemented, right? And, well, if we can rank all these projects that we're considering, if we can rank all these candidates for HEVE position, then the best candidate from the principal's perspective has the payoff capital B. Notice that there's no subscript K because this is the maximum over the set of all possible options. And the payoff is capital B. So let's say the best HEVE on the list that I can hire brings me a huge payoff, I don't know, 10,000 euros. Well, if this person is to be hired, then the agent will get a payoff that's equal to fraction beta of the best payoff that the agent could get from hiring another agent, from hiring another HEVE. So it takes a moment to understand, right? It takes a moment to understand these notations. So let's say we have three options, HEVE 1, HEVE 2, HEVE 3, so these candidates, and the payoffs are 100, 200, and 300 from the principal's perspective, and are I don't know, let's say 200, I don't know, let's say 70 and 60 from the agent's perspective, right? So these are the differences. Now, what is the best possible payoff to the principal? It's 300, right? So your capital B is equal to 300. And the principal is the happiest hiring candidate three if only the principal knew their qualities and if only the principal had the formal authority to make this hiring decision. Now, from the agent's perspective, the best candidate is candidate number one. Of course, if the agent is to hire, if the agent is to make a hiring decision, then the agent would hire agent number one. So the small b, the highest payoff for the agent, is 200 from hiring agent number one. Now, what are these parameters, alpha and beta? They are called congruence parameters. They measure how compatible the party's preferences are, right? So if the principal hires his best candidate, the principal gets the payoff 300, the agent gets the payoff 60, okay? So hiring the principal's favorite candidate brings these payoffs. What is the beta? What is the fraction? Calculate the beta. So what is beta? Beta is the loss that the agent will suffer from principal hiring his best option. So what's the agent's maximum payoff? What's the maximum payoff of the agent? 200. If the principal hires his favorite guy, the payoff to the agent is going to be 60. What is beta? Well, beta is the ratio between the payoff to the agent from the principal's favorite option, which is how much? So what's the agent's payoff from the principal's preferred option? 60. And what is the agent's best possible payoff? 200. So beta is equal to the ratio between the agent's payoff from the principal's preferred option and the agent's best possible payoff. Do you understand now?
Yeah.
Okay, so beta is, as you rightly said, 0.3. Now let's try to calculate the alpha in this example, right? So what is the alpha? The alpha is analogous. The idea is analogous to beta, right? So if the agent gets to choose his favorite option, what is the agent's favorite option? The agent's favorite option is option one. Right? Be precise. You are referring to the agent's best payoff. But the agent's best option is? Option one. Very good. If the agent has the authority to choose option one, what will be the payoff to the principal? 100. Okay. So if the agent chooses his favorite option, the payoff to the principal is 100. Okay? What is the best possible payoff? What is the highest possible payoff to the principal? 300. So the alpha is the ratio between the payoff to the principal from the agent's favorite option, right? Divided by the maximum possible payoff that the principal could get. Okay, so how much is alpha? 1/3. We can use proper fractions, it's okay. Okay, so in this example, alpha is 1/3 and beta is 0.3. Okay, so they're roughly the same, even though they're not quite exactly the same. Okay, so do you understand the difference? Do you understand how these alpha and beta calculated? Well, remember, it takes effort to work out which option is best. All right, so but just by looking at the list of candidates, you cannot say which candidate is best and for whom, right? But what you can do is you can apply a cost, and when you apply a cost of searching through the options, then with certain probability, you can find out the best option for yourself, right? It's never perfect. No screening is perfect, as we learned from Personnel Economics 1, but you can learn about the best option for yourself with certain probabilities. So to formalize this idea, first consider the agent. The agent, at the cost of effort given by this expression, if the agent pays this kind of cost of effort, then the agent can learn with probability small e what the best option is, what the best option in terms of payoff is. And with probability 1 minus E, you learn nothing if you are an agent, right? So if you work harder, then you learn about your best option with greater probability. If you work less hard, then you are less and less informed. Or put another way, if you really want to be very, very certain about what your best option is, you have to work super hard, right? And that makes sense, right? If you want to pass the exam with the highest possible probability, you have to do what? You have to do more learning, okay? So to find out how to solve such this problem or the other. Similarly, if you are the principal, then if you apply this cost of effort, then with probability capital E, you're going to learn what the best option for you is, right? So in my little example, you know, if my administrative assistant spends, I don't know, 5 hours of her time going through the candidates, then with pretty high probability, she will learn who the best candidate for her is. And, you know, if I spend just 15 minutes looking at the names, then the probability with which I can learn about the best candidate for myself is going to be very, very small. Okay. Now, the information search efforts by the agent, small e, and by the principal, capital E, are chosen simultaneously and without consultation with each other, right? Of course, you can redefine the model, and that could be an interesting exercise. You can redefine the model in which the principal and the agent could coordinate on their costs of search, but that's a completely different ballgame, and so we have no time to investigate it further. But, you know, for a small project, you can consider doing that. Okay, so once you've invested the effort in finding out what the best option is, you can recommend the implementation of a certain project to your partner, right? So if you're the agent, you can say, oh, look, Nick, there is this wonderful candidate. We really, really have to hire this candidate. And if the principal is informed, the principal will say, you know what, Ulrike, there is this wonderful candidate number 17. We absolutely have to hire them, right? So the principal and the agent can recommend options to each other. And then which option will be chosen depends on who has the authority to do so. Now, who has the formal authority is the next topic in our discussion of the model. There are two possibilities. There is the P formal authority and the A formal authority. What this means, P formal authority means that the principal has the formal authority over which project to implement. Remember the definition of the formal versus real authority, right? The formal authority is the rubber stamp. Or not agreeing to rubber stamp, right? So under what happens under P formal authority? Now, under P formal authority, when the principal has the formal authority, with probability capital E, that depends on the effort that the principal has spent, the probability capital E, the principal is going to be informed about the best option. And therefore, having the formal authority to implement the preferred option, the principal will ignore the recommendation of the agent. And so, therefore, with this probability capital E under P formal authority, the principal is going to implement the best project for himself, and he will get the pay of capital B, and the agent will get the pay of B. The agent will get the pay of beta times small b, according to the notations on this slide. Yes. And of course, with probability 1 minus capital E, the principal is what? The principal is not informed. The principal has no clue. The principal has the formal authority. And then if the agent is informed, which happens with probability small e, the agent will make a recommendation. The principal will profess ignorance. The principal will say, sorry, I really don't know, but you can go ahead. And the principal will rubber stamp. Okay. Now, this is what happens under P formal authority. Now, the A formal authority is the delegation. Is when the principal says, dear agent, you have the formal authority to do what you like. You know, here's the paper authorizing you to implement whatever decision you want. Now, what happens then? Then the agent will inform himself with probability small e, right? It's not perfect. The agent will spend some time searching through the options and finding the best option. And With this probability, the agent is informed, and the agent will what? The agent will implement the best option for him or herself. And in this case, the agent will get the payoff small b, which is the highest payoff the agent can get. And the principal will have to contend with a fraction alpha of the best possible payoff that he could get because, sorry, but the formal authority to make the decision now rests with the agent. However, with probability 1 minus small e, the agent is uninformed. So yes, the agent can make a decision. The agent has the formal authority to make the decision, but the agent has no clue. And then the agent calls the principal, says, well, okay, what would be your recommendation? And then if the principal is informed, which happens with probability capital E, the principal says, I think we should choose the option such and such. And then the agent rubber stamps. All right. Now, it can be that both principal and agent are informed, in which case which option will be taken will depend on who has the formal authority. It can be that neither principal nor agent are informed, in which case the default option of no decision will be implemented, bringing payoff zero to both parties. Okay, now let's write down the payoff functions to the for the principal and the agent in cases of both P and A formal authorities to see what decisions they will make under each configuration of authority in organizations. And then we will compare these with each other and assess their costs and benefits. So consider the case of P formal authority. This is the case when the formal authority rests with the principal, which means that in this case, the informed principal can make his favorite decision without consulting with the agent. The payoff of the principal in this case, with probability capital E, what happens with probability capital E? With probability capital E, the principal gets to implement his favorite project, and that brings principal payoff capital B in the notations of the model. Do you understand why? Do you understand why? Because he is informed with this probability and he has the authority, so he will go ahead with his favorite plan. Now, with the reciprocal probability, the principal, even though he has the formal authority, the principal can be uninformed, the principal have no clue, and then the principal calls the agent, says, dear agent, what would be your recommendation? And then the agent says, you know what? I think we should choose this option. And then the principal, being uninformed, says, okay, let's go ahead. I will rubber stamp your recommendation. Now, so the principal has to be uninformed, which happens with probability 1 minus capital E. The agent has to be informed, which happens with probability small e. Do you understand? And then the agent's favorite project will be implemented. But as far as the principal is concerned, the agent's favorite project will bring him only fraction alpha of the best possible payoff that he could get. Do you understand? Do you follow? And of course, on the cost side, in this payoff function, are the principal's costs of finding out what the best option for him is, right? So, and you have the verbal explanation here. Now, in case of P formal authority, the agent's payoff is given by this expression. Let's go through it. Now, with probability capital E, the principal is informed, right? And if the principal is informed, he will do whatever he likes, the best option. And the best option to the principal will bring payoff beta fraction of the best possible to the agent, right? In our example, beta is 0.3, right? So now this is what happens when the principal is informed. So the agent has no choice over the options. But it could be that the principal is not informed. And then if the agent is informed, the agent will recommend his best option and the principal will accept. Why? Because it's better for principal to accept the option preferred by the agent than no option at all. Because the congruence parameter for the principal is alpha, which is above zero. So the principal will still get something, even though it's not his favorite option. Now, and with probability 1 minus capital E times 1 minus small e, right? No one is informed, as I said, and then the payoff is zero, and then it's kind of payoff neutral. So you subtract the costs to the agent of searching for information about the best option. Do you understand the setting? Okay, now as we noted, the decisions in this situation are the decisions over how much effort to choose by the principal and how much effort to choose by the agent, right? So you have two payoffs of two parties playing a simultaneous game with each other, right? So you know how to solve this game. Let's find the Nash equilibrium in this game. We find the first order conditions by differentiating the payoff functions of the principal and the agent. And that gives us a system of two equations in terms of two variables, capital E and small e, from which we can solve for the optimal effort levels by the principal and by the agent. So the optimal effort by the principal and the agent are derived from the first order conditions on the agents and principal's payoffs, and that's kind of your Nash equilibrium idea, right? So let's differentiate the payoff of the principal. That's kind of obvious, no? So you take a derivative with respect to capital E. So if you differentiate, you get B, right? And then you differentiate with capital E here, so you get minus E times alpha times B minus the derivative minus the G prime P of capital E. When you clean up the terms, you get the following first order condition that determines the principal's effort as a function of the principal's costs of effort, the payoff that the principal can get, and also the activity that the agent can undertake at the same time. Similarly, if you take a derivative of the agent's payoff function with respect to the agent's decision variable, which is small e, right, then after differentiation, you'll get the following first order condition. So these are the two equations in terms of two variables, capital E and small e, simultaneously solving which you get the optimal values of the information search. Okay, so let us look at some comparative statics here, right? So we'll have a tutorial, or if we don't have a tutorial on that, there will be a questions bank, so don't worry. But we most likely will have a tutorial on the authority, and then we will solve for... We will redo these steps with specific numbers and you'll see how it plays out. But for now, we can do comparative statics, right? So we can do comparative statics to see how these differences shape the effort decisions by the principal and the agent. Now, so this slide kind of summarizes the main comparative static results on the Nash equilibrium search strategies by the principal and the agent. So principal puts in higher effort, the higher payoff he gets from this decision, and the less interested the agent is, right? So let's see why it's the case. Now, look, if the payoff to the principal goes up, right, then the marginal benefit of the principal for search activity increases proportionally, and then it makes sense for the principal to work harder. Okay. Now, what happens though if the principal knows that the agent is going to work hard on finding the best option for the agent's perspective? That reduces the marginal benefit of search for the principal. Why? Why is more effort by the agent reducing the marginal benefit of effort for the principal? I think you've just answered the opposite question. Why may it not be profitable for the principal to, right? Right? So look what happens. So the harder the agent searches, the less the marginal benefit of effort for the principal is. My question is why? You say, oh, because then the agent will choose the project that's best for the agent. But that's precisely what the principal doesn't want. You know, so if I don't want my agent to choose the best option for her, then, you know, I don't want this, right? So if I have the formal authority, I will try to be as informed as possible to be in a position to override the recommendation of the agent and implement my favorite option. Yeah, so nice try, but it's the answer to the opposite question. So any idea? Right? Look what happens. There are three factors here. The search by the agent, the effort by the agent, the congruence parameter, and the payoff to the principal, right? So if the congruence parameter, alpha, is very high, so alpha, let's say alpha is close to one. What does alpha close to one mean in terms of our notations? What does alpha close to one mean? Nearly the same. So the recommendation of the agent is nearly as good to the principal, right? So let's, right? Because then when the agent implements his best project, the principal is not much worse off compared to his best possible, right? So, and in the extreme case, when alpha is equal to one, the principal and the agent have completely the same understanding about what the best option is, right? And then if alpha is equal to one, what happens is that the principal is not very interested in searching for information because, you know, he can delegate this to the agent. Not delegate to the agent, we're not doing delegation here, but the principal can sort of free ride on the agent's effort, in the knowledge that the project that the agent will choose will be very close to the principal's best possible option. You understand? Now, what does a small alpha mean? You know, let's look at alpha like really close to zero. I don't know, 5%, 10%, something like this, right? What does a small alpha mean? It means, in more precisely, it means that the best project from the agent's perspective is really not the best project from the principal's perspective, right? It means that there's a conflict of interest. It means that there's no congruence, there's no agreement between the choices, between the best preference of the principal and the best preference of the agent, right? So if alpha is small, what happens to the agent's effort? So if alpha goes down, what happens to the agent's effort? Exactly. Why? Because the principal wants to prevent the agent implementing the project that will not be to the principal's liking. This is intuitive. It's not rocket science, no? Okay. So the same for now look at the agent. Now look at the agent. So if the best payoff for the agent increases, what happens to the agent's effort? Yeah. It's econ 101. You know, your marginal benefit increases, what happens to your effort? If somebody pays you more for the hour of your work, how many hours will you supply? Well, exactly, right? If you get higher payoff from choosing your best project, right, you will work harder, yeah? What happens to the agent's effort when the principal works harder? Well, because, yeah, if the principal works harder, the principal will be very likely informed, right? In which case, the effort of the agent is going to be wasted. Why? Because the informed principal will do what he likes, not what the agent recommends. Do you understand? This is precisely why there's no congruence parameter here. So under P formal authority, it doesn't matter how congruent the principal and the agent's decisions are for the agent's effort choice. Why? Because if the principal is informed, then the agents will have no say, right? That's the P. Does it make sense to you? Takes time, but yeah, sure. So if you right. So, okay. Yeah, it does take a bit of time. And once again, as I said in the introductory lecture, make sure you derive these results on paper. Like, no iPads. Take a piece of paper. Take a pen, not a pencil. Write down the payoff function. Take derivative. Do it very, very old school. It really does help. Okay? So, as I said, the best preparation for the exam is to be able to derive things. Of course, you need a bit of understanding of what's going on in the background, but the technical skills are practiced in this way. Okay, so this is the case of this is the case when the principal has the formal authority to make the decisions. The characteristic of this case is that when the principal is informed, which happens with probability capital E, the principal will do what he likes, regardless of the agent's recommendation. And only in the reciprocal case, which happens with probability 1 minus capital E, will the principal care to listen to what the agent has to say. And that, of course, is not great news to the agent. Now, let's see what happens when the principal delegates the formal authority to the agent, right? So this is the case of aformal authority, when the agent has the rubber stamp, when the agent can make the decision without consulting with the principal, if he so chooses. Now, the payoff functions obviously change. Why? Because, well, let's look at the principal, okay? When the agent is informed, which happens with probability small e, what will happen? Exactly. This is the payoff that the principal will get from the agent's choice. And the principal has absolutely no say because the formal authority rests with the agent. Now, in the reciprocal case, when the agent is not informed, what happens? The agent calls the principal and says, yo, I have no clue. What's your suggestion? What will be your suggestion? And then if the principal is informed, which happens with probability capital E, the principal will recommend the project to the agent, and then will the agent implement the project? Then yes. And which project will the informed principal recommend to the agent? Exactly. Which means that in this case, the principal will get his favorite payoff, right? And you have the cost of effort here. Now, what about the agent? With probability small e, when the agent is informed, he can choose the best project for the agent, for himself, right? Getting a payoff small b. Now, when the agent is not informed, right, and the principal is informed, the agent will listen to what the principal has to say and rubber stamp the project proposal by the principal, giving the agent a payoff fraction beta of the best possible that he could get, minus the cost of effort. All right. Notice the difference here. This is a formal authority. This is p formal authority. Notice the difference in payoff functions. This difference reflects who has the power and who is informed. Right. So it goes together. Right. Just having a power to make decisions is not sufficient. You have to have power and information. But conditional on being informed, the power to make decisions matter to people's payoff functions, right? And that's a very deep idea. By the way, Jean Tirole, the second author on this paper, got a Nobel Prize in economics, I think, in year 2015 or some, less than 10 years ago. Not specifically for this paper, but this is classical stuff. You have to read it. This is econ proper, okay? So now, let's look at the Nash equilibrium in this game under the case when the agent has the formal authority. So we calculate the first order conditions, just like in case of P formal authority, and we have these two first order conditions. They are two equations in terms of two variables that we can solve. Now, we don't solve them here, we will solve them in the tutorial, but now let's look at the comparative statics, right? So before we go into comparative statics, I just wanted to sort of bring these payoff functions and the first order conditions together to, to illustrate perhaps the most important point. Look at the first order conditions for the principal effort when he has and has no formal authority. Please tell me, in which format, P-formal or A-formal authority, does the principal have more incentive to work? Well, in other words, in which type of authority will the principal work harder? No, but the first part of your statement was right. Okay, let me help you. Under which type of authority is the marginal benefit of effort higher for the principal? What is the marginal benefit of effort? It's this under P-formal authority, right? And this under a formal authority. My question is, which of these expressions is bigger? No, exactly the opposite. Algebra. Alpha is less than one. Right? So if alpha is less than one, then this term is bigger than this term. What does it mean? Under what type of authority will the principle work harder? A formal or P formal? The marginal benefit of effort is higher. So holding everything constant, the principle has larger, higher marginal benefit of effort under P formal authority. So remember, let's go back. No, but you've asked a good question. So see, with probability E, and E is obviously being probability is somewhere between 0 and 1, right? So are you convinced now that this expression is larger than this expression? Right. Which means, economically, that when the principal has the formal authority, the principal has more incentive to find out what the best project is and, you know, make a decision based on his information rather than the agent's recommendation. Okay. Now, let's apply the same logic to the case of the agent. Under which type of authority will the agent have more incentive to work? P formal or A formal? What happens when you delegate power to the agent? What happens to his effort? Right, because the principal cannot override him, no matter how informed he is. The implication is, if you want people to work harder, if you want to motivate people to put in more effort, one thing you can do is delegate authority. Delegation. Delegation works wonders. Delegation makes people work harder because when you delegate authority down, then people are in a better position to do what they like best. Okay, and that's great because the agent has more chance of maximizing his payoff. And what this means is that you can keep the agent on a lower participation constraint and still on a lower sort of wage level and still enjoy services, right? So, I mean, if I worked in an investment bank or a consulting firm with, I don't know, 80 hours a week, working schedule with lots of traveling, with no choice over the projects that I'm doing, I would be making, I don't know, maybe twice as much, but I would have very little authority about what to do. Now, university professor is great because a lot of authority is delegated to me. And so I can choose the best option for myself. And, you know, I'm perfectly happy earning significantly less than investment bankers, but enjoy a better work-life balance, right? So if you want to kind of retell this story in sort of less mathematical terms, then that's the story. Okay. But of course, you know, delegation is not the silver bullet. The delegation is not universally the best motivational strategy that you can implement. Why? Because delegation also has costs. What are the costs of delegation? Oh, okay, the benefits are clear. Agent works harder. The principal can sort of relax a bit and hire agent for a cheaper wage, right? But what are the costs of delegation? Why is not all power always delegated down to agents? The cost of delegation is that, well, if there is a conflict of interest between the best option for the agent and the best option for the principal, when you delegate things to the agent, you increase the chances that the agent will do something that you really don't like. So we're talking about shirking, we're talking about corruption, we're talking about lack of oversight, we're talking about conflicts of interest, we're talking about reputational damages, all sorts of stories can be told under the framework of this model, right? So delegation has benefits and costs. The benefits are clear, agent works harder, but the costs of delegation are that the principal loses control. And if it's very important for the principal to keep control, the principal should not delegate. Now, so at the end of this lecture, let us look at the problem of the optimal delegation. So we have found out that delegation has costs and benefits, which means that there exists an optimal degree of delegation, right? It's neither zero nor 100%. Now, to formalize this problem, consider M decisions that will have to be made, right? So for example, who to hire, where to buy drinks for the office, how much to invest in business expansion, which assets should we sell and buy, right? So these are decisions, and each decision has a nomenclature of projects, nomenclature of options, right? So we are kind of adding another dimension to the principal agent problem of Aguillon and Tirole that we studied earlier in this lecture. For each decision, there are the familiar parameters, right? So for each decision, there are best payoff for the principal, best payoff for the agent, the congruence parameters corresponding to each decision, and the efforts by the principal and the agent over each decision, right? So remember that K is now not the project, the K is a decision. Okay? So, and decisions, each decision has options. Take, for example, decision number one, who to hire. The nomenclature of projects there, Ralph, Dick, and Harry. Yeah? So, and Arthur. These are the guys that you want to hire, right? So, where to buy drinks for the office is another decision, and there are other options there, right? It's not Ralph, Dick, and Harry. It's whether to go to Edeka, Aldi, or hire someone to deliver drinks to your office, right? And if you want to hire someone, then who will it be? You get the idea, right? So we have this kind of two-dimensional decision problem now. Now, for each decision, define a dummy variable X, which is equal to 1, if the principal has the formal authority over this particular decision. And X is equal to 0 if for decision K, the principal delegates the formal authority to the agent, right? So for decision number one, who to hire, X1 is equal to 1 if the chair makes his own decisions who to hire. And X1 is equal to 0 if the chair delegates to the secretary the authority to hire Heavies without agreeing it with the principal, right? So then the optimal delegation problem is the discrete choice problem for each decision, whether to delegate or retain the authority. Let's write down this maximization problem. The maximization problem looks like this. So what we do is we summarize the principal's payoff. We take the sum of the principal's payoff over all the decisions in case of retaining the authority and in case of delegation of the authority, right? So this is the principal's payoff when he retains the authority, when X is equal to 1. And this is the principal's payoff when the principal delegates the authority to the agent. And what's this thing is? This thing is the Lagrange multiplier times the participation constraint for the agent. Do you understand? Remember Lagrange multiplier from high school algebra? Right? So it's a maximization problem of the principal's payoff subject to keeping the agent on the participation constraint, right? So the agent will get the payoff depending on whether it's delegation or no delegation. Then the agent has the reservation utility, of course, and you take this constraint, attach Lagrangian multiplier to it, and add it to the principal's profit to the principal's payoff maximization problem. If you take, well, you cannot really take a derivative because it's a discrete choice problem. X, K can be 0 or 1. But what you can do is you can calculate the payoffs under different combinations of X equal 1 or 0. And, right, so what you can do, please try it at home. And if you have questions, ask me. So for each decision, the Lagrangian increases when this decision is when the formal authority rests with the principal, as long as the principal's payoff from retaining the control over this decision is greater than the costs that the principal carries in terms of extra wage to keep the agent on the participation constraint. So for each decision K, this is how much the principal gains by keeping the decision within his authority. But this is how much money or other goodies the principal has to pay to the agent in order for the agent to still want to work for the principal, right? So if the investment bank wants to hire me, or a consulting company wants to hire me, right, then they would, this is how much they would get from dictating me what to do. But this is how much they would have to pay for the privilege of dictating me what to do, right? And if the benefits are larger than the costs, then the consulting company should hire me. Now, let me tell you, something suggests that given my age, knowledge, and education, the benefits from hiring me to a consulting company or investment bank are not going to be that huge, right? Which means that, you know, I'm better off in my mid-40s working as an irrelevant university professor than the captain of the industry, right? But maybe if I were more knowledgeable, younger, more energetic, then maybe these calculations would be different. If you rearrange the terms here, then you will get the following expressions. They are on the slides are okay. This is the payoff to the principal. Because it's a, look, it's a function of x. If you, for every possible combination, so your x can be any kind of combination, any permutation of 0 and 1. If you substitute this permutation in this formula, you'll have the payoff for the principal from a given combination of formal and real authority, right? And we want to choose the best combination from this from the possible number of permutations. Then when we assess this expression for x equal 1 versus x equals 0, it's not difficult to do that because the payoff function is separate, so we can ignore these guys that don't contain the x. We should only worry about the terms that do contain the x. So when we assess, when x is equal to 1, let's say, when x is equal to 1, we have this benefit to the principal. Do you understand? But then when x equal to 1 for decision k, your Lagrangian increases by this term. And if the payoff to the principal from retaining formal authority for project K, for decision K, is bigger than the costs that the principal has to pay to the agent to keep him on the participation constraint, it makes sense for the principal to keep the formal authority for this decision. If, however, the payoff to the principal is not that fantastic, but the costs are large, then the principal should delegate the authority to the agent. For example, consider a particular decision K. For example, I don't know, for example, hiring an IT assistant to my chair. This is a huge problem, I must say. So I have Mac, which is not compatible and it's not working very well. And you see this, right? So I always need an IT heavy. Traditionally, the task has been delegated to the secretary who needs an IT heavy even more than I do, right? So I'm fairly certain that when it comes to the decision of hiring IT Heavy, my preference will be very congruent with the preference of my secretary. So for this decision, alpha is very close to 1, okay? So if alpha is very close to 1, what happens to my payoff from retaining the formal authority over who to hire as an IT Heavy? Is it large or is it small when alpha is close to 1? In other words, do I care a lot when alpha is close to 1? Very low, exactly. So the benefit of retaining the formal authority over hiring an IT heavy for me is very low, right? Is that what we're saying? And why? Because I largely agree with the preferences of my secretary over who to hire. So the congruence is very high. But I have to pay the costs, right? So the secretary may have her own preferences, and she spends more time with IT Heavy. She needs really to, she cares more, and so she should, I think, because she spends more time with student assistants, which means that her interests are important, especially if her congruence parameter is not very large. If it's very high, then you know we're practically indifferent. But if I largely agree with the decision of the agent, while the agent may not agree with my decisions, then to retain the formal authority over decision K, I have to pay a lot of money to the agent. And that is not necessarily to the best possible financial gain, right? In which case, this condition will not be true, in which case, XK is equal to 0, all right? So then this decision is delegated to the agent. If, however, take another decision, let's say, which journal to send my next research paper, right? So I like to keep the authority, the formal authority for this decision in my own hands because, well, I'm not sure how big the congruence between our preferences is, right? So when alpha is small, the benefits from keeping the formal authority are high. And when beta is large, the costs of keeping the formal authority are low, in which case, for this decision K, the principal wants to retain the formal authority to themselves. As I said, it makes a lot of sense. And if you want a more formal condition, when to delegate authority and when to retain the authority, these are the conditions that define the rules, right? So if this ratio is less than this ratio, it means that the benefits from delegating authority are lower than the costs of delegating authority, in which case the principal has to keep the authority over this decision K. But in the opposite case, the decision, the authority to make this decision K should be delegated. Now, and looking at these conditions, delegation should optimally be done if the decision is not very important for the principal, right? So if the principal's best payoff from decision K is low, then this expression is likely to be high, in which case this condition doesn't break down and we do we have to do delegation. Delegation should be made when the decision is important for the agent, because when the best payoff for the agent is large, this condition is less likely to satisfy. The opposite condition is more likely to satisfy, which means that there is a more case. There's a bigger case for delegation. If the agent can be trusted by the principal, so if the congruence between the preferred principal and agent's decisions are very high, so high congruence parameter alpha, delegation is well in order. But when there's a conflict of interest between the preferences of the agent and the preferences of the principal, which means that alpha is small, which means when alpha is small, this condition is more likely to satisfy, this condition is less likely to satisfy, which means that the principal should retain the formal authority. When the congruence parameter between the agent's and principal's preferences is low, which may be the case, then there is more case for delegation. The principal has to allow more authority to the principal because it's cheaper to do so given the participation constraint. Now, that brings us to the end of our lecture today. These slides, let us skip these slides. And we will, as I said, we will do a tutorial on real versus formal authority, where we will develop some of the themes that we raised in this lecture. So let me indicate once again that this slide, well, basically all these slides are exam not relevant until the chapter leadership, but whatever material we will study on authority during the tutorials will automatically be exam relevant. Are there any questions at this point? Doesn't look like the case. So, in which case, thank you for your attention and I'll see you tomorrow.